Then the Christmas entertainment. The tramping of class after class up the aisle to the moment of footlighted glory. The big eighth graders' Christmas pantomime. The first graders' performance of the Christmas dance as fairies. Or were they snowflakes? Or perhaps angels? It was not clear. They were tremendously applauded, whatever they were. The swelling hearts of their parents burst into wild hand-clapping as first grade began to file down the steps from the platform. Janie, sitting on her mother's lap, beat her hands together too, excited by the thought that next year she would be draped in white cheesecloth, would wear a tinsel crown, and wave a star-tipped wand. Then it was the turn of the third grade. The 8- and 9-year-olds, the boys clumping down the aisle, the girls switching their short skirts proudly, the careful tiptoeing up the steps to the platform, remembering not to knock their toes on the stair treads, the two lines of round faces facing the audience, bland and blank in their ignorance of, oh, of everything, thought David's mother, her hand clutching her handbag tensely. The crash from the piano, giving them the tone, all the mouths open. It came upon the midnight clear, that glorious song of old. The thin, pregnant woman sitting in front of the mother leaned to the shabbily dressed man next to her with a long breath of relief. They do real good, don't they? She whispered proudly. They did do real good. Teacher's long drill and hers had been successful. It was not howling. It was singing. It had cost the heart's blood, thought the mother, of two women. But it was singing. It would never again be howling. Not from those children. It was even singing with expression. Some. There were swelling crescendos, and at the lines, the world in solemn stillness lay to hear the angels sing. The child voices were hushed in diminuendo. Part of the mother's life had been spent in securing her part of that diminuendo. She ached at the thought of the effort that had gone into teaching that hushed tone, of the patience and self-control, and endlessly repeated persistence in molding into something shapely the boy's puppy-like inability to think of anything but aimless play. It had taken hours out of her life, crammed as it was far beyond what was possible with work that must be done, done for other people, not for her, not for the mother. This had been one of the things that must be done, and she had done it. There he stood, her little David, a fully accredited part of his corner of society, as good as anybody, the threat of the inferiority feeling averted for this time, ready to face the future with enough self-confidence to cope with what would come next. The door had been slammed in his face. She had pushed it open, and he had gone through. The hymn ended. The burst of parental applause began clamorously. Little Janie, carried away by the festival excitement, clapped with all her might. Learning the customs of her corner of society, thought her mother, smiling tenderly at the petal-soft noiselessness of the tiny hands. The third grade filed down the steps from the platform and began to march back along the aisle. For a moment, the mother forgot that she was no longer a girl, who expected recognition when she had done something creditable. David's class clumped down the aisle. Surely, she thought, David would turn his head to where she sat and thank her with a look, just this once. He did turn his head as he filed by. He looked full at his family, at his father, his mother, his kid sister, his big brother and sister from the high school. He gave them a formal, small nod to show that he knew they were there, to acknowledge publicly that they were his family. He even smiled, a very little, stiffly, fleetingly. But his look was not for her. It was just as much for those of his family who had been bored and impatient spectators of her struggle to help him, as for her, who had given part of her life to roll that stone uphill, a part of her life she never could get back. She shifted Janie's weight a little on her knees. Of course, did mothers ever expect to be thanked? They were to accept what they received without bitterness, without resentment. After all, that was what mothers worked for, not for thanks, but to do their job. The sharp chisel of life, driven home by experience, flaked off expertly another flint-hard chip from her blithe, selfish girlhood. It fell away from the woman she was growing to be and dropped soundlessly into the abyss of time. After all, she thought, hearing vaguely the seventh graders now on the platform, none of her four was in the seventh grade. David was only 8. At that age, they were, in personality, completely cocoons, as in their babyhood they had been physical cocoons. The time had not come yet for the inner spirit to stir, to waken, to give a sign that it lived. It certainly did not stir in young David that winter. There was no sign that it lived. The snowy weeks came and went. He rose ravenously hungry, ate an enormous breakfast with the family, and clumped off to school with his own third graders. The usual three stormed back after school, flinging around a cloud of overshoes, caps, mittens, windbreakers. For their own good, for the sake of their wives-to-be, for the sake of the homes which would be dependent on them, they must be called back with the hard-won, equable reasonableness of the mother and reminded to pick up and put away. David's special two friends came to his house at 4 to eat her cookies, or went to each other's houses to eat other cookies. They giggled, laughed raucously, kidded and joshed each other, pushed each other around. They made snow forts in their front yards. They skated with awkward energy on the place where the brook overflowed the meadow, took their sleds out to Hingham Hill for coasting, made plans for a shack in the woods next summer. In the evening, if the homework had been finished in time, they were allowed to visit each other for an hour, to make things with Meccano, things which were a source of enormous pride to the 8-year-olds, things which the next morning fell over at the lightest touch of the mother's broom. At that age, thought the mother, their souls, if any, were certainly no more than seeds deep inside their hard, muscular little boy flesh. How do souls develop? She wondered occasionally, as she washed dishes, made beds, selected carrots at the market, answered the telephone. How do souls develop out of those rough-and-ready little males, if they do develop? David and Peter, living close to each other, shared the evening play hour more often than the third boy who lived across the tracks. There was a shortcut down across the vacant lot. The little boys loved that downhill shortcut. Its steep slope invited their feet to fury. Never using the path, they raced down in a spray of snow, kicked up by their flying overshoes, arriving at the house, their cheeks flaming, flinging themselves like cannonballs against the kitchen door. "Shh! David! Not so loud!" his mother often said, springing up from her mending at the crash of the banged open door. "Father's trying to do some accounts." Or, "Sister has company in the living room." One evening she suddenly knew, as definitely as if she had heard a clock strike or a doorbell ring, that the time had passed for David's return from his evening play hour with Peter. She looked at her watch, but she did not need to. A sixth sense told her heart, as with a blow, that he should before this have come pelting down the hill, plowing the deep snow aside in clouds, hurling himself against the kitchen door. He was late. She laid down the stocking she was darning, stepped into the dark kitchen, and put her face close to the window to look out. It was a cloudless, cold night. Every detail of the backyard was visible, almost transparent, in the pale radiance that fell from the stars. Not a breath of wind. She could see everything. The garbage pail at the woodshed door, the trampled snow of the driveway, the clothes she had washed that morning and left on the line, the deep unbroken snow beyond the yard, the path leading up the hill. Then she saw David. He was standing halfway down, as still as the frozen night around him. But David never stood still. Knee-deep in the snow, he stood, looking all around him. She saw him slowly turn his head to one side, to the other. He lifted his face towards the sky. It was almost frightening to see David stand so still. What could he be looking at? What was there he could be seeing or hearing? For as she watched him, the notion crossed her mind that he seemed to be listening. But there was nothing to hear. Nothing. She did not know what was happening to her little son, nor what to do. So she did nothing. She stood as still as he, her face at the window, lost in wonder. She saw him, finally, stir and start slowly, slowly down the path. But David never moved slowly. Had he perhaps had a quarrel with Peter? Had Peter's mother been unkind to him? It could do no harm now to go to meet him, she thought, and by that time she could not, anxious as she was, not go to meet him. She opened the kitchen door and stepped out into the dark under the stars. He saw her. He came quickly to her. He put his arms around her waist. With every fiber of her body which had borne his, she felt a difference in him. She did not know what to say, so she said nothing. It was her son who spoke. "It's so still," he said quietly in a hushed voice, a voice she had never heard before. "It's so still." He pressed his cheek against her breast as he tipped his head back to look up. "All those stars," he murmured dreamily, "they shine so, but they don't make a sound. They're nice, aren't they?" He stood a little away from her to look up into her face. "Do you remember in the song, 'The world in solemn stillness lay'?" he asked her. But he knew she remembered. The starlight showed him clear, his honest little boy eyes wide, fixed trustingly on his mother's. He was deeply moved, but calm. This had come to him while he was still so young that he could be calmed by his mother's being with him. He had not known that he had an inner sanctuary. Now he stood in it, awestruck at his first sight of beauty, and opened the door to his mother. As naturally as he breathed, he put into his mother's hands the pure, rounded pearl of a shared joy. "I thought I heard them singing." "Sort of," he told her.